This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teik. Act for Cat is a coalition founded in 2015 by the Bar Council Human Rights Committee, the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia, Amnesty International Malaysia, Lawyers for Liberty, and Suara Rakyat Malaysia to set our country on a path towards accession of the United Nations Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment, otherwise known by the acronym UNCAT. My guest today, Abdul Wahab Hani, is a committee member on UNCAT and is here in Malaysia to speak to, among others, religious leaders and scholars, as well as newly minted Foreign Minister Dato' Saifuddin Abdullah. All these to help Act for Cat achieve its goal of getting Malaysia to accede to UNCAT by year's end. Mr. Abdul Wahab, welcome.
Thank you.
I understand this is your second visit here. Last year you were in Malaysia to speak to government officials, civil society, about Malaysia's commitment to accede to the UN Convention Against Torture. And I believe the hope last year was that Malaysia would ratify this convention by mid-2018. Can I get a status update from you as to how much progress we have done? Are we one step closer towards this ambition?
I am confident that Malaysia can ratify as soon as possible, perhaps this year, perhaps before the Universal Periodic Review scheduled in November in Geneva. As you know, this is a new exercise, new procedure that every country can before the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva every 4 years to assess its records on human rights. And I am confident that the government, with the political will now, at the high level, especially with the manifesto of the new ruling party, it's point paragraph 26 and 27 to ratify international convention, human rights international convention. I am confident also because I see some progress, a good progress from the side of the administration, from the side of the government, technical, civil servant, especially different administration at Minister of Home Affairs, Foreign Affairs, and others. And also, I think a good commitment from the civil society side, both from the Amnesty International, this coalition for Act for Cat, for the convention, yes, but also from the Islamic part, the conservative branch of the society. And I think it can help also. The third aspect, I think, is the work, the hard work done by SOACAM, the National Institution for Human Rights. I will be happy, and my committee also, to see Malaysia make a good announcement in UPR next November session.
Yeah. So tell me what has changed, because aside from having a new government in place, they spelled out very clearly in their manifesto that this is a promise. They will ratify the remaining UN conventions that Malaysia has yet to be a party of. But the religious concerns, as you mentioned, and aren't those concerns still there? You know, talk to me about this political will and the resistance that is still going to be faced by the new ministers and politicians in place now.
I think the first aspect that you mentioned is manifesto, and I think it is a good political will. The second aspect, when we met with the ambassador, with the Minister of Foreign Affairs, a new minister appointed, our brother and friend, Dr. Saifuddin Abdullah, he accepted to meet us, me and the delegation, SOACAM delegation, 24 hours after his nomination. I think it was his first official meeting after his tutorial with his colleagues. And I think it is a strong signal also that the Minister of Foreign Affairs meet the delegation, meet the UN, the member of the United Nations Committee Against Torture. I think this is also a strong message. And his message was clear that this government want to change and want to change his relation with human rights and especially with rule of law. And he made a strong message on this, and it was a very good meeting. And he mentioned to me that his ministry is under pressure because he's between the international and the national affairs, because they receive a strong message from outside, from the international community, to ratify, to be torture-free nation like others, and to join the United Nations Convention Against Torture, the more other 164 state party now. And to move to this club of free torture nation. You mentioned also this manifesto, and I think compared to last year, I think this is a strong commitment. And as you know, the civil servant administration, they are under the service and of the leadership, and the government play the leadership. Also, when we meet the parliamentarian from different group, I see also good commitment from parliamentarian to move and to see Malaysia ratify as soon as possible. And as you know, the ratification process, you need the approval of the parliament. And I think it is a good step. The third aspect you mentioned about the resistance. I see some resistance like last year, but this year we have this very constructive discussion with the Islamic organization, with the Islamic community, with Centra, the leadership of Centra. And I think it is legitimate to different branch, a component of the society to express their concerns. And it is legitimate to see some resistance also. You cannot have change like this from today to tomorrow. And we have a good discussion with Islamic scholars and also with different organizations. And I remember my meeting last year with Mufti Wilaya, who is very open and very good discussion. And he told me officially that there are no obstacles to ratify the convention from the Islamic perspective, from the religious point of view. There are still some discussion dealing especially with corporal punishment. And I explained to the Mufti Wilaya that the UN Convention Against Torture and the whole human rights system, the international system of protection of human rights, are not designed against religions, against belief of people. No. All these systems are designed to support the rights of all human beings. And we are not against the Sharia system. The concern of the committee is directly linked to the corporal punishment. And the corporal punishment now exists in some civil law, in Sharia law also. And this is our concern, but we can deal with it later when Malaysia becomes state party, when Malaysia submit its first report and later its periodic report every 4 years. And this is an ongoing process to change law, to harmonize the national law, the domestic law and procedures with the international standards. But this is not an obstacle. And I see from this meeting with the Islamic organization that they're open, and they mention officially in their statement that there are no obstacles, they are not against the ratification of the convention. And it is very interesting that all components of the Malaysian society now are agree to ratify the convention. Because you don't have a perfect situation. When you ratify, you engage with the UN Committee Against Torture. We are a committee of 10 independent experts elected and nominated by the state party to the convention in their biannual meeting. And we serve the ideas of the United Nations on a voluntary basis. And also, our role is to help all state parties and in future, inshallah, Malaysia to respect their international engagement and obligations under our treaty, our convention, and to give them the better expertise we have. Because The committee was established 30 years ago. In April, we held our first meeting on April 1988. It means that you have a good expertise now, accumulated expertise during 30 years. The committee see different country, different situation compared to Malaysia or from other or other situation, and you can have this access to this international expertise in order to harmonize law, to change, and in order also to drive changes in the country. And this is the point for this follow-up mission for me, because I see here the conjunction between the national need of reforms and the establishment of a new commission of institutional reforms, and also this expertise accumulated with our committee now and the other treaty bodies. And Malaysia can benefit from this international expertise to drive its national change and its institutional reform, especially on the field of human rights, on the field of the independence of judiciary, on the field of the harmonization of its national law with the international standards.
Yeah. So walk me through this UN bureaucracy in terms of what Malaysia needs to do in order to be a party. You mentioned that it's going to be a process. So does that mean we don't need to change all the laws that we need to change before signing this convention?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When the state party sign or ratify or accede to the convention, the state party announces a political will, announces engagement to react and to engage with the international body, with the Committee Against Torture. And we are designed to help all state parties. And we have this periodic report every 4 years. It means that you don't have a perfect situation.
There's no time frame as well.
No, yeah. We give some recommendation. We ask the government to the state party to implement. And sometimes we need time. And also you need our convention. We have more than 16 substantive articles. I think we can summarize them on 10 main obligation and purpose. Education, training, fundamental legal safeguards of detention, for example, definition of torture, criminalization of torture, and any other provision, but all linked to the idea of absolute prohibition of torture by any time. No exceptional circumstances can legitimate torture, and we have a strong definition on this. And our work is to help all state parties. There are no prerequirement, no conditions to be a state party. But you need to engage locally. You need to engage this kind of national discussion. I think for me this is the first time when our committee engage with a future state party. Mm. And this is our, I think, our first, this is the first case when the committee, member of the committee, visit the country before the ratification in order
Malaysia
to discuss. Malaysia is the first country. I think I will mention to my colleagues in Geneva that this is the best practice we need to engage with in order first to demystify the relation between the treaty body system, the UN system, and the country and the people. And here in Malaysia, we have a good opportunity to meet with the government officials, with the judiciary branch, with people from civil society, people on the street, you see. And it is very interesting to meet you, media, to meet academia, to meet religious leaders in order to engage this discussion. Second aspect also, it is very interesting to do this work. Why? Because you engage this transparent manner to deal with the international affairs, that the ratification is not the matter of the government. It's a matter of people of Malaysia. And I think during this campaign launched by SWACAM, the National Institute for Human Rights, and the Coalition Act for CAT, and also this campaign launched also by the Islamic Organization and the Umbrella of Centra, I think all these campaigns, during years and years and years, SWACAM mentioned to me that during 18 years they are fighting for the ratification. And I think it is very interesting because you can have, and I see, that in Malaysia they have good media coverage for this question. You can have a good ownership of the purpose of principles of the convention and the prohibition of torture. This is a national process. When the government decide, the cabinet decide, they need, I think, a few weeks or perhaps a few months to engage with the parliament in order to have the approval of the parliament. And after, there are no UN bureaucracy for this, just the submission of the instrument of ratification to the UN Secretary General, to Mr. Guterres. And 1 month after the entry in force of the convention for the country, and 1 year after, the government, in the name of the state, need to present the first report of Malaysia. And this is a national report. This is not a government report, governmental report. The government is responsible to present it, the federal government, but in the name of the nation. It means in the name of the executive branch of the state, in the name of the legislative branch, in the name also of the judiciary branch, in the name also of the local state power. And the idea is to establish a constructive dialogue with the committee. After the first report, we will submit our concluding observation and our recommendation to Malaysia, and we will construct our future discussion every 4 years to help, to give recommendation, to see your challenges. And for this, we need a good report from the state party, from the state, from the government, but also from the civil society and from the national human rights institution. But there are no conditions to ratify.
Yeah, absolutely.
The unique condition is the public will and the political will to prohibit torture.
Yeah, this issue about condition and the requirements, because that has been a criticism of the universal periodic review process, isn't it? That there are no sanctions, there are no punishments if governments do not meet their obligations. And so what is the incentive or the benefit of a country like Malaysia joining the convention if there's no requirement, even if we don't meet the report recommendations by experts? Why do we need to join the convention?
First, I think the international level, when the state party like the state like Malaysia become a state party, he sent a message, a powerful message, that the ratifying state and the international community are united in their conviction that torture can never be tolerated under any circumstances. It means that the country become member of the club of torture-free nations. And I think this is a strong message, especially for a democratic country like Malaysia. Second, the ratification also built mutual confidence between Malaysia and the international community on the field of human rights. There are some aspects in our convention dealing with the international cooperation, extradition, for example, for non-refoulement, because you need to make the crime of torture extraditable. It means that also it is part of the international cooperation, respecting human rights. But if Malaysia ratify, it means that Malaysia can benefit from this international expertise to drive its national reforms, institutional reforms. Our convention is dealing with the prohibition of torture, but if you look at it, you look to the convention, you can find that many provision are dealing with the reform of the justice sector. For example, the principle of prevention of torture, because we can prevent torture. And the convention is designed to prevent torture. We are not waiting until torture happens to fight against it. No, we need to prevent torture. And the crime of torture is preventable. And it is better to invest on prevention with legal, fundamental legal safeguards, for example, with any other measures of prevention, with rehabilitation of victim, with the independence of justice, with the modernization of law, etc., etc. And the other point also, as you know, that the UN adopted the Swiss Sustainable Development Goals. to replace the Millennium Development mm-hmm. Goals. And there are 17. One of them is directly dealing with justice, strong institution, justice, etc. SDG 16. And now you have a direct link between the convention and SDG 16. And Malaysia, as other nations, need to report to the UN on its effort on the SDGs, on Sustainable Development Goals, especially this one dealing directly with justice. And there are many aspects where Malaysia can benefit from this expertise and from this ratification. Coming to your question about UPR, UPR is a political peer-to-peer review between government, using very diplomatic words, but also serious one. And Malaysia, during its last UPR review in 2013, accepted the idea, in principle, the recommendation calling to Malaysia to consider its position to ratify the Convention Against Torture. It means that we have many serious recommendations. Malaysia accepted them totally or partially. And Malaysia need to follow this engagement in November session this year, November 2018. But the treaty body are expert treaty, not political body like the Human Rights Council. It means that we try to apply the convention and the provision of the convention. And when we give our recommendation to Malaysia, we will follow this recommendation in the next cycle, 4 years after. And our committee established also a follow-up procedure 1 year after the adoption of the report, 1 year after the presentation of the report, the examination. We will submit our recommendation to Malaysia with 3 to 4 urgent recommendations and realistic recommendations to follow in the framework of 1 year. And we have a system of scoring of this follow-up. It means if the country, the state party, is not serious, you can see that the scoring will be negative. And it can have an impact on the image of the country, of the state party, on the global affairs, its international relations. And I think now human rights become a core element, an essential element in the international cooperation globally, but regionally also. In your region, you have in ASEAN, the ASEAN Commission for Human Rights. It means that even in the regional cooperation for development, for economic affairs, for environment, you have also this component of human rights who is now the an essential component of regional international cooperation.
Right. We talk about the need to say no to absolute no tolerance for torture. What is the UN definition of torture? Because in Malaysia, it manifests itself in corporal punishment, as you mentioned, capital punishment, the death penalty, as well as custodial death and extrajudicial killing. Are we on the same page in terms of how Malaysia defines torture and how UN and experts like yourself define torture?
Until now, Malaysia have a vague definition of misconduct of public servant. But our convention is very clear on the definition. We ask all state parties to incorporate in their law, domestic law, in their penal code, the definition of torture. The definition of torture means any act by which severe pain and suffering, physical or mental, is intentionally inflicted on a person for such purpose as obtaining from him or third person information or confession, punishing him for an act or third person has committed, or is suspected of having committed, or intimidating, or concerning him or other person, or for any reason based on discrimination of any kind. Or of any reason based on discrimination, when such pain or suffering is inflicted by or at the instigation of or with the consent of or acquiescence of a public official. It means you have different element. You have the element of the act of torture, who means any act which severe pain or suffering, mental or physical or mental. Second, intentionally inflicted. Third, the purpose of this torture to obtain information, to obtain confession, to intimidate, to discriminate, and the actor, the official servant, directly or by his order, under his order, acquiescence or acceptance, etc., etc. It means that we have a very secure and very precise definition of torture. Now we are dealing with torture made by public servant, by public official, not other kind of torture in private era, for example. And we will ask Malaysia to incorporate this definition of torture in the Malaysian penal code, but also we ask all state party to criminalize torture, because it's easy to prohibit torture, to mention that torture doesn't good and we need to prohibit it, but we need to criminalize, this is our Article 4, and you need also to prosecute torture with a very severe also sentences, because this is a severe crime. This is a crime against our dignity, because the society, the justice system, the police have the right to arrest people who are doing the wrong thing. Now I see in the media that the former prime minister, he was accused and he will be perhaps sentenced. But you need to respect their rights, their fundamental rights as human being. Deprivation of liberty cannot legitimate any kind of deprivation of fundamental rights, because you destroy the dignity of this person. If you destroy their dignity, what is the result later? If you see Guantanamo, for example, or Abu Ghraib, when you deal with this cruelty with this detained person, you are sure that you create Daesh at the end of the day. But if you treat them with dignity, punishment, okay, but with dignity, respecting their human being, you can expect that at the end, after this period of prison, of arrest or detention, they can return to the society, perhaps with a good behavior, not with the very bad one like we see after their stay in Guantanamo, for example. And we will ask also Malaysia to implement all legislative, administrative measures to prevent torture, especially the legal fundamental safeguards. When you arrest people, you need to inform them about their right, about the accusation, to respect their right to food, to sleep, to contact with their family. You see, this is a common sense rights. There are some very good provision into national law in Malaysia, but there are some aspects Malaysia need to reform, like any other country. And I can mention to you that during its work, during 30 years now, the committee find every time some place to give recommendation to state but to improve their situation. There are no perfect situation during our 30 years of work. And I think one of the very sensitive question is the corporal punishment in the penal code. I see whipping, caning, and I see this morning in the newspaper that the former prime minister, perhaps he will be sentenced to 20 years of jail, but also caning.
Yeah.
And for the committee, this kind of punishment need to be ended and replaced by an alternative measures, alternative punishment. This is the position of the committee. But we discuss with the state party. We have a good constructive discussion, even for this provision in the civil law and also in the Islamic Sharia law. We have a good discussion with Great Britain, with UK, Ireland, with some Islamic country about this. But this is not an obstacle to ratify. And you see, many people, for example, this caning at school, for example, for many people it's a good thing to do. But we need to assess this practice. Right. Are this practice, even for the good purpose of education, are these practices in conformity with the dignity of your children or not? And do we reach the same objective of education with another alternative measures without attempt to the dignity of a human being. And there is this kind of question we need also from you, media, and from all components of the society to discuss about it, because the fight against torture is not a matter of lawyers or judges or attorney general or the government. No, it's a matter of all people, because any people can be arrested.
Yeah. You need the buy-in of the public in order to support the political will to further this process. Yeah. So on this issue about public perception, in Malaysia, a few years ago, there was a survey done that people are, or rather a majority of people are in favour of the death penalty, the capital punishment, especially in serious crimes, serial rapists, child rapists or serial killers, paedophiles. What do you say to them, especially families of victims who want to see some form of justice done, right? Redress. What do you say to them that capital punishment or death penalty is, if you want to take away that?
Yeah. For our committee, we always recommend to all state parties to establish a moratorium in order to abolish death penalty. But we discuss although with them the conditions, especially of this person sentenced and in waiting in death narrow during sometimes decades and decades. And it is for the committee, this situation represents torture, mental torture. And also, we try to explain to all state parties that they need to invest, to change, to move to an alternative measures, life sentence or any other kind of sentence. And also from the Islamic perspective of view, because I see that Malaysia, you have this strong position inside the... I see that Malaysia is a multi-ethnic nations and diverse nation, but with a strong organization of the Muslim community as a majority. Any doubt need to be in favor of the accused person. This is a principle of law. This is a principle also of the Islamic law, even for hudud practiced in some country like Saudi Arabia. Idra ul hududa bi shubuhat. This is the hadith of Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam. It means that if you execute this person and you discover 5, 10, 20, 25 years later or 30 years later that he was innocent, it's a strong mistake. And I think moratorium on and abolition of death penalty gives the society this possibility to perhaps double check again. Perhaps a new element can appear later. And second aspect, in normally you have the notion of pardon in all culture, in Islamic culture, in Christian culture, in Buddhist culture, in many cultures you have this notion. It means that justice is the purpose of the justice is to punish, yes, but not to intimidate. Justice is not a vengeance, and I think death penalty can represent a kind of vengeance also for the family of victim. If you receive the truth, and if this responsible of this act, the criminal, is sentenced with a hard sentence, like life imprisonment, for example, and if he seek pardon, why you maintain the death penalty? Why? Because you seek redress with this with justice. But this is a discussion inside the society. The committee, we don't have the position that death penalty represent torture. No. This is a position of special rapporteur, of others, but not the committee, because you don't have this provision in our convention. But we encourage all state parties to abolish death penalty. But I see also that this is a very sensitive question. It needs times, it needs discussion, it needs sometimes political will. In France, for example, political will by President Mitterrand in 1981, few months after his election, he decided. He played his role as a leadership of the nation. He was elected for this to abolish death penalty in 1981. But in another country, sometimes you need a referendum, sometimes you need more discussion. This is, I think, a national and domestic matter. Some other state, federal state like Malaysia, you have different position in different states, like in the United States of America. But I think we need to engage a constructive discussion. And the same discussion we'll have in Geneva, you have it in Malaysia. And they discover that many NGOs are against death penalty. Some others are asking to maintain this sentence. This kind of discussion also, and is very legitimate to different components of the society to express their point of view. But when the state decides, you need to respect the decision of your state.
I hope this conversation continues up to November, when Malaysia is due to present its report at Geneva for the Universal Periodic Review. Mr. Abdul Wahab Hani, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.